and the fly in the oil, and when the storm bring the whole thing down. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@ricksmithshow.com. Our quote of the day from Michelle Obama, who said, "The presidency doesn't change who you are. It reveals who you are." And look, I look at this guy. I look at the Orange Menace, the Marmalade Mussolini, whatever you want to call him. And it really, I mean, magnifies exactly who this guy is. And look, over the weekend, we saw some of the worst things out of this administration. And, you know, more golfing. Who doesn't want more golfing? Oh. Scary, sad, and dangerous all at once. And here to help us work through some of our problems, our good friend Propane Jane. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
There was golfing. Lots of golfing.
At least he's consistent. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, I think it's sort of the hypocrisy is just astounding, right? Because I seem to remember when President Obama even thought about golfing, it was like this huge scandal, and how much money, you know, the taxpayers were spending on shuffling him back and forth, and just how incensed people were that he had the audacity to golf.
Yep. And this was going to be the guy who was going to work all the time. He was going to be tremendous. He was going to be great. He was just going to work. And yet you've got California that's literally burning. You've got Puerto Rico, who no one has electricity. You've got four dead soldiers. You've got all of this stuff. And golfing. I guess golfing is what we do, right?
That's his job description. It's like we were talking about last week. You know, in his mind, his job is to manufacture these, you know, stunts that are pleasing to his supporters. And it's not to solve problems. They didn't elect him to solve problems. They elected him to cause problems and to be the roller coaster and Mr. Unpredictable, and, you know, flying by the seat of his pants. And this is what we have, unfortunately.
And, you know, at every turn, you know, I keep coming back to that. And maybe I'm sure you remember this as well, when they had the big shindig with all the military brass standing around and all the people, you know, all the photo ops, and him going, you know, this could be the calm before the storm. Mm-hmm. I keep going back to that moment going, the storm is coming.
And you can't even waste time trying to figure out what the storm is or was, or, I mean, because ultimately this is the narcissist who cried wolf again. This is the boy who cried wolf. This is him trying to create this like aura of suspense and mystery, and you just never know what he's going to do next, because he wants people to feel that way. I don't think that it registers that, you know, a president isn't supposed to kind of leave you hanging in suspense. It's like your oncologist is not supposed to leave you, you know, wondering whether or not you have cancer. And so unlike most presidents that we've ever had, you know, when there are crises happening, he actually ratchets up the crisis. I mean, you know, and it's very much, I think, from an entertainment standpoint, where he's coming from, because he's trying to draw attention to himself, and it's almost like just to boost ratings, just to see what's going to happen next, and not necessarily, you know, thinking about his role as a president is supposed to be to, you know, put forth calm and assuredness, and people shouldn't be afraid of what's going to happen next. But I think he actually likes that.
Well, I mean, it is all about the ratings, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, it's all about him. Now, what did you think of this weekend? I mean, this weekend, outside of golf, because, yes, there was golfing.
Yes.
Because there was a smiling picture with Rand Paul, and they do make such a cute couple.
Oh, gosh.
But he was at the Values Voters Summit, and Trump, first sitting president ever to address this crowd.
Right, yeah.
Where he said, you know, we don't worship government. We don't do that, Jane. We worship God.
Does he though?
And I, my first thought, I'm going, really? Did I miss something?
It's very hypocritical, right? I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, how much did they talk about, you know, the gun violence epidemic? How much did they talk about pro-life from a standpoint of protecting people from gun violence? You know, the hypocrisy of standing there and saying you value Christian, you know, the Christian teachings, when you're literally like just throwing the sick and the poor to the wolves. You just signed an executive order to take health care away from millions of people. So it's very antithetical, and I think it just further exposes the hypocrisy of that entire crowd.
Right, but he says, you know, he says, quote, "We are stopping cold the attacks on Judeo-Christian values. Stopping it cold. Done. No
how?
More."
How are they doing that, though?
Because we're going to go after those gays. In fact, if you read the New Yorker article, I guess Trump even jokes that Pence wants to hang all gay people.
It's amazing how much they sound like Putin and Russia and the Taliban. I mean, right? I mean, there's all this fundamentalism and actually, like, it's right-wing extremism, and you know, the same kind of fear that they had about theocracy and, you know, Sharia law and all of this. It's amazing how they don't see their own, you know, similarities with those movements.
No, I mean, it's just plain nuts. But, you know, I look at this and, you know, I'm my fear is, and this is, you know, and we've been talking about this for a while. My fear is that, you know, finally there's a point at which we all just kind of break and go, you know what? I'm just turning away, and moving on.
Yeah. You know, I think that the fatigue is definitely real. I had some friends were sending around like kind of a group text. And these are mostly psychiatrists, of course. So somebody said, you know, I have outrage fatigue. Every day I'm outraged by something new, and this thing that you've sent me, I can't muster the appropriate level of outrage because I'm already like maxed out for this week.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that in a joking manner, the sitting president of the United States, the most powerful man in the country, is turning to his number two that he chose and said that if he had his way, he would be hanging people.
It's disgusting.
I read that and I'm just going, it's got to be Andy Borowitz. This can't be true. This has got to be satire.
It's for real. And what I think is also, you know, really disheartening is that, you know, if you were to go to like any, you know, like Stormfront or like the comment section at Drudge and InfoWars, and this is the kind of thing that they are saying, you know, very regularly and openly. And so, again, like we talked about last week, you know, when he says these things, it really is going across very well for his supporters, for that 35% that really do believe this and really do feel this way. You know, during the campaign, they surveyed, you know, like back during the primary, actually, and they surveyed Trump voters in South Carolina, and most of them, I mean, it was like 80% were for banning all Muslims, and felt like the South should have won the Civil War. And these things that we sort of think are like very harebrained and like, oh, I can't believe people actually think this. There's a lot of people that actually think that. And so it doesn't feel hypocritical for them to see a man who is in a, you know, admitted sexual predator, you know, acting like he's preserving Judeo-Christian values. He was just served a subpoena from a woman who alleges that that she was, you know, sexually molested by him in some way. So, you know, I just feel that from the outside looking in, you know, all of us who aren't his most fervent supporters see it as very, you know, atrocious, actually, But they don't see that. They don't have that same mirror being held up to their own face.
Now, how do you do that? Look, I railed against Trump. What Weinstein did is just is deplorable. You know, how is it that, you know, from the right wing, we heard nothing about Trump whatsoever. There was never a statement on, you know, this is, you know, the whole grabber by the peep thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not a peep. Church mice. And now Weinstein's the devil incarnate, and now the Republicans are the great defenders of women's rights.
Right. It doesn't make sense. I mean, he doesn't even stand up on its face. And I think this goes back to that idea of Trump really being a savior for these people. And he is seen as infallible. They've already put him in a category where, you know, anything he does is okay just by virtue of the fact that he's on their team and on their side. And so something, a behavior that they can, you know, easily look at another person and say, okay, that's wrong, he shouldn't have done that. They can't do that for Trump because they are basically conditioned at this point to weasel out of it in some way and to say, oh, that's just fake news, or, oh, that's just, you know, you just don't like him, or, you know, you're just, people just like to lie about him because, you know, he's powerful, or whatever excuse they come up with.
Yeah, my favorite is, he gave up the perfect life to come and save us. I love that frame that, you know, he was living the dream. He was living the dream, and now he's given up all of that just to save us, which is just, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, minus Russia, right? I mean, minus any role that Russia may have played in this process in terms of helping him along to get where he is to do the things that he's doing. I mean, you have to sort of just ignore that whole piece of it. But in addition to that, I think that also misses one very important piece of this, which is that Trump is miserable. I mean, yes, he sort of, you know, is always going to engage in this self-aggrandizement. But you know, this entire time, there's nothing but leaks coming out that are just continuing to say that he, like, hates everybody that's there. He, you know, he hates the fact that he can't just come and go as he pleases and that people are scrutinizing him. You know, he is so obsessed with seeing how he's being discussed in the media. That this is actually a very unpleasant situation for him, and that's also why he's acting out in the way that he's acting out. He's not having a good time.
There's part of me that goes, you know, I look at him and I go, I don't actually know. I mean, he looks like in his big rallies when he's in his environment, man, he looks like he's thrilled throwing the bombs. But, you know, given that frame that you just laid out, because you're right, there is a lot of things he can't control, and his frustration on the Twitter is always very apparent. There was a story today on over at CNN that said that, you know, the House leadership is concerned all to be because they're thinking they're going to lose the House. And at least that's what Paul Ryan told all of the big money donors in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, is that, you know, we're going to lose the whole deal. And that's going to mean impeachment for Trump. And my thoughts were, you know, if let's say the Democrats did take the House and you did see this kind of a push to hold him more accountable, how much crazier could he be? How much more dangerous would it make a narcissist to have that kind of a scenario?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, you know, Trump is going to try to make deals with whoever he can make deals with. And so, you know, when we say dangerous, I think it means the word dangerous, you know, in terms of Trump means different things to different people.
I mean, touching a button that blows up North Korea and starts the next
exactly,
war.
Exactly. Like that's like the existential threat, right? I mean, that's the biggest danger, I think.
I mean, coming out and saying that we're going to restart the Crusades by going into Iran.
Exactly. But the Republican Party, you know, put him there because they are under this, you know, mythology and fantasy that they can control his behavior. So take all of that kind of off of the table, because in their minds, they somehow still think they can stop him from doing something that dangerous. Dangerous for the GOP means that Trump is so narcissistically driven that if he's not happy with the Republicans and the fact that he has no loyalty to them, he easily will walk over to the Democrats and say, I just want to do something with y'all, number one, to spite the GOP, And then also to give himself whatever victories he can actually get in the media. And the media loves this story, right, that Trump goes behind the scenes and he's wheeling and dealing with Nancy and Chuck. And they like that story because it feels like, whoa, he's unpredictable, and he really is this, like, maverick-type person who just does whatever. But for the Republican Party, this is very dangerous because he is constantly turning his weapons against theoretically what's supposed to be his own party. And they are also very willing to primary people. I mean, even Steve Bannon is there. And I think he said something like within the last couple of weeks that the only person he's willing to not go up against is Ted Cruz. And like everybody else is just kind of fair game.
And what is the love affair with Ted Cruz?
That's your state.
What's your state?
I cannot tell you. I mean, I think it really is just that he's, proudly ignorant, and they like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no other explanation.
Yeah, I don't know why Ted Cruz is the golden child on the white supremacist right. I just don't know.
It doesn't make any sense. I know.
Gets me is, this is way off topic, but, this Milo I can't even say his name, but how is Milo the golden child with the white supremacist? How have they not lynched him?
Because as long as you toe the party line, you become one of them.
Yeah, but
Carson is there, and this is how, David, the Sheriff Clark in Wisconsin, as long as you are, self-loathing to a certain extent that you are basically singing the same white supremacist tune, then it's okay and you belong. And so I think that is definitely something that is playing out, in particular in these races that are going to be coming up, like, what is that in Alabama? They have a race coming up.
Yeah, Moore and Jones.
Exactly.
You've got the craziest theocrat possible. Someone who has duped people into giving him money so he can enrich himself, and and then running against a guy in Doug Jones who is a good, decent, fighting guy. Went after and prosecuted. I think it was the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. Years after the fact,
right.
Someone who was really conscientious and thoughtful, and sadly, I think he's going to lose. But to a guy who's just insane,
yeah, and that's the parallel, right? Is that there can be and there's like an allowable amount of insanity that the Republican Party is willing to tolerate, and for them, it isn't as dangerous as it looks to us because that's actually what their voters are wanting. And I think Trump, is kind of an affirmation for them that they want to still go down this same path of insanity and hatred and ignorance because they see that won him votes. And while there are people sort of, more in the establishment of the party and more people that are in these purple districts around the country that are wanting to go, okay, no, this is not okay. This is like an adult daycare center or whatever they can say to register some level of disapproval of what they see. They are being, kind of put to the side. Their concerns are being put to the side so that Trump can continue to rally his base and continue to do these very erratic and very dangerous things. And I just think that, for whatever reason, for their own personal reasons and their own personal gain, they're just allowing it to continue. And it's very unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, it's scary stuff. And again, it comes back to, these people are soulless. I mean, and that's all I keep coming back to, because the things, I look at this healthcare thing, which I've been talking about. Deciding that we're going to, rip the subsidies out because everyone hates insurance companies. And I'm with you. I hate the insurance companies too. But by doing this, that millions of people are going to lose their insurance and people will die earlier than they should have because they don't have health care. That's the reality. And you've got these Republicans and you've got Donald Trump and you've got these folks who are going, we don't care. Screw them.
Yeah. And this is what we were talking about last week when we were talking about this idea of you know, the 35%, and how so many of these people, you know, are actually going to be detrimentally impacted by this agenda. I just saw something the other day that said 70% of the people who are going to be affected by this new change in the subsidies are people that are in Trump counties. And so this is a very clear example of how, you know, they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. And it's not really a situation where you can say, oh, well, they didn't know this was going to happen. He and the Republican Party have been saying this nonstop for the last 7 years. That they're going to repeal Obamacare and that they're going to take all of these subsidies away. They've already said all of that. And so these people, like you said, they just decided, you know, I don't really care about that because it's more important to me that this is a guy who's going to build the wall and this is a guy who's going to stop letting Muslims into America. And this is a guy who isn't going to, you know, let the gays and lesbians and transgender, you know, just be free in this society. And those things were more tangible to them than, like, the bread and butter, you know, kitchen table things that are actually going to keep them afloat.
Yeah. What's the matter with Kansas? No, you're right. But here's the last question I've got for you. Is there ever a moment where there's an epiphany? Because, as you pointed out, because of this executive order, you know, more red states are going to be harmed. More voters in red states are going to be harmed than ones in Democratic states.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a moment? Is there that epiphany where you go, you know, all of the horrible things that are going to happen are going to be to the people who are angriest against the establishment, and when they realize that their savior, are they incapable of realizing that this is not their savior?
I think they're incapable of realizing it. Okay. I think that they have. These are the same people who think Reagan, you know, hung the moon. And we've had decades now of really concrete evidence to show the detriment that was done, due to his policies across the board.
Can't argue with that.
Right, yeah, but again, this is that political ideology that resonates with people's hearts and not necessarily their minds. They're sort of thinking with their emotions as opposed to looking at the facts on a piece of paper and because they're going to basically just throw the facts out and say that they're fake news.
Because they are conditioned to do that.
I mean, they are conditioned to do that because it feels comfortable and it feels better to have some thoughts and some ideas coming from, you know, a politician or, you know, somebody who's running to be the president of the United States that feel like the same thing that you think on the inside, even if it is wrong based on the facts. They don't necessarily care about that. So I think that we are past the point of them actually coming to some come to Jesus epiphany moment. There are enough hypocritical things that have happened to this point that they should have already had that epiphany already. So our main goal really is to mobilize and organize people who aren't falling for the BS and who have sense enough to know this is bad, I see who's doing it, and I'm not going to vote them back into office. And I'm going to, you know, put somebody else there that is making more sense and that is at least, you know, dealing with the reality that's in front of us.
Or at least that's the hope. As always, Jane, yeah. I appreciate the time. Good stuff. I can't wait to talk to you again.
All right. You too. Have a great week.
You as well, our good friend Propane Jane. You know, here's the thing. You know, it's going to take us. It's going to take us to wake up and well, it's going to take us to fight back. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.